Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Human Rights for Prisoners March. This is the Human Rights for Prisoners March on Blog Talk Radio. We also have a show on National Network in Action that airs on Monday nights at 12 p.m. That's midnight Eastern Standard Time. And so, this is our first broadcast on Human Rights Demand. We have an interesting show for you today, and it is called Forcing Plea Bargains. Yes, Forcing Plea Bargains. There are individuals all over the country who are forced to accept plea bargains. It is done by enforcing indefinite detention without trials. It is done also, I found out yesterday, by torturing inmates, torturing them and denying medical attention until they accept a plea bargain. I have an individual who will talk to you about his wrongful incarceration where he was beaten by police, his leg was broken, he was taken to jail, he said, in Boulder County, Colorado, and he was kept there without medical attention denied for the excruciating pain in his broken leg until he would plea bargain. So, in case Americans think that people who plead guilty are guilty of, necessarily guilty of what they pleaded guilty about, I want you to know that you are very wrong. People are forced into plea bargaining whenever the prosecution feels that it does not have a good case. We also have Elizabeth Crudup on the line. Elizabeth Crudup is a woman whose son is right now suffering indefinite detention without trial because he refuses to plea bargain. His name is Shannon Nairobi, N-Y-A-M-O-B-I. He is a 19-year-old young man who even his so-called victim, the woman who he supposedly shot, even she says Shannon Nairobi did not shoot her. So therefore, the prosecution there in Franklin County, North Carolina, understand that they do not have a good case against Shannon Nairobi because the victim clearly said that he did not shoot her. And even though she was shot in the head and they probably expected her to die, she did not die. So she is there and available to question about who shot her. So it was not Shannon Nairobi. Therefore, they will not let him have a trial. So we have interesting case here today. We also know that Terrell Scott, that's T-E-R-R-E-L-L, S-C-O-T-T, was kept incarcerated indefinitely without trial in Pennsylvania. He was a young black man with mental illness who they put false sexual molestation charges against, but they never intended to defend these charges in court, and they never did defend them in court because they kept Terrell Scott in jail under horrible circumstances for 4.5 years. After almost 5 years, because he has mental illness, they were able to break him down and make him plea bargain. So these are the things that are done, ladies and gentlemen. Terrell Scott was beaten so badly that he went blind in one eye and deaf in one ear. He also was forced to clean up blood and urine without latex gloves, blood and urine from his HIV-positive cellmate. He had to clean up. And then also he was spat in his eye by an HIV-positive person, and he is also now concerned about his health status. So after going through this, being thrown in the hole, the solitary confinement, for years, and expecting to be able to go to trial and clear his name, he was being forced by indefinite detention to accept a plea bargain. So I want to know if my guest is on the line today. My main guest today will talk about his brutality in Boulder County Jail, Robert Cotton Martin. Are you there, Mr. Martin?
Yes, this is Mr. Kirkland.
Well, hello there. I'm glad that you were able to join us, and you're right. I apologize. This is Robert Cotton Kirkland, and he is going to talk to you about his wrongful incarceration in Boulder County Jail, 8 days with an excruciating, painful, broken leg. Go ahead, Mr. Kirkland, and give us your review of your incarceration.
On December 11th, Mary, 2011, I actually December 3rd, 2011, I confronted a person who I believed at the time to be taking advantage of a few of the disabled people in the complex where I was staying and working. I confronted the lady about it, not once but several times within about a three-month period. And on December 3rd, I had pretty much had enough of her taking things from these disabled people in the complex. So I knocked on her door. She came to the door. I just hollered through the door. I never even saw the lady. It was a closed lock front door of her condo. And basically just told her to leave my buddy alone that she was stealing from. And she called, come to find out, she was a confidential informant. My sources say that. I can't. You know, they put that confidential on there so they can lie about it. So whether she is or whether she's not was a confidential informant, I cussed her out through the door, basically, and just walked away. The next day, two police officers came to the condominium where I was doing some light remodeling. And right off the very, very bat, I knew that this was not a normal call because the officer looked at me first thing and said, "Cotton, do you remember me?" Well, I'm an artist. I'm a portrait artist, sculptor, and I don't forget faces. I told the officer, "No, sir, you don't know me. And I don't know you." And for one, he wouldn't have even known my name was Cotton. It's not my given name on my birth certificate. It's just what everyone calls me, you know. And it was what I'm sure that this woman relayed to them, that my name was Cotton. But that put me on guard right away. And when the officers asked to enter the residence where I was working, there was nobody living in the residence. It was empty. I said, "No, you may not come in." And at that point, there was no talking left. There was no, I was automatically slammed to the ground, handcuffed without even knowing what, there was not even at that point, a charge. There was not a ticket. I didn't even, you know, I knew that it had to be behind me cussing the lady out through the door. But I was not, I in fact was never even read the, I didn't even know what I was charged with until 4 days after the incarceration. But when they started arresting me, well, I cussed them out. You know, I said a few choice words. And they were laughing back and forth on the way to the jail. And a sally port is where when you come into a jail, you're in the car, they raise doors, and you go into what's called a sally port. I knew something was really going to happen because they were already geared up and waiting. I've got five video clips that I obtained from the Boulder County Sheriff's Department. The first clip, you see the officer motioning me from the car. You see my foot step out. I'm coming out. My head's coming out of the car. Two police officers grab me by the back of my jacket and slam me headfirst into a wall. And a recent case that has been on the news lately of them doing it in a courtroom, I saw the police do it just a couple of days on TV to a guy in the courtroom, and it almost knocked me out at that point. And then I was thrown against the wall and was kicked in my kidneys about three, four, five times. All this time I'm handcuffed. Well, they ran me through a series of hallways. In each one of the video clips, you see me being twisted, turned. You know, they don't give you like it's not a motion video. It's kind of like a picture here and a picture there. So they're really not, you can kind of see what they're doing, but once the video evidence and the medical reports began to develop, it all made sense of the injuries that I had. The last video clip is of them taking me around a doorway into what they called the disciplinary pod. And that's the last video clip you see is one of the police officers run and get something from a drawer and run back around the same corner that they had just advanced me through. Upon coming into the cell, there were four police officers, at least three that I know of, that had me. They were on me, and I was thinking as we were coming towards the bunk that it was not going to turn out very well. So I tried to just kind of turn my body to where I would receive the least injuries because I was handcuffed. And when we get to the bunk itself, they broke me sideways over the bunk and broke my tibial plateau. At that point, I started screaming, "You broke my leg, you broke my leg." And at that point is when I heard the officer that retrieved something from the drawer enter the cell. And at that point, he said, "What's going on here?" My face was to the wall, and they had one of them had their hand on my head to where I couldn't turn my head at all. One officer say he called me a name, and then I heard same officer that came in say, "Break his other leg." At that point, I felt my right come up in the air. My shoe came off. I felt somebody grab my toe and heel and try to spin my ankle, which sprained it so severely that it swelled up four or five times the normal size, and actually didn't break the ankle, sprained it very badly, and my big toe. I was screaming. It seemed so surreal at that point that I just kept telling myself, "Be still, lay here, and it'll be over in just a second." But then a light just flashed. It was like I'd never felt anything like that. And that's when they tased me in the ankle that they tried to break. At that point, I saw my own toboggan cap. It was in December, so it was very cold here in Colorado. Come around from my right side, and whoever had that around their hand tried to shove it in my mouth. I didn't know at that point that I would survive. I thought at that point that I would be killed. I had fear for my life at that point. And it was like whoever had that in my mouth and they were shoving it all the way to the back of my throat, it was like they had a second thought and were going to retreat out of my mouth, and then with a viciousness just shoved it as far as they could in my mouth and then pulled it out. And they stripped me down and left me laying there with my leg broken. My left shoulder was dislocated. They did so much nerve damage to the ulna nerve that drives your fine motor skills to the tips of your fingers, that I just last month had surgery. All the muscles atrophied in my left hand, which I've been told by the specialist that I'll never retrieve those muscles again. It's just a consequence of what type of damage they were inflicting on me. I'm an ex-military man, and I am trained and was trained by the U.S. military to in hand-to-hand combat. Also belted in two different disciplines of martial arts. I didn't resist. I never resisted. There was no chance of resisting. They left me just laying there, a broken man. At one point, I remember hearing someone out in a day room area outside the cell, and the voice was saying, "Billy Ray, hey, Billy Ray." And I kind of lifted up to try to get off the bunk. I had forgotten. I don't know if I'd forgotten or the pain was so intense, and I was in shock that I tried to stand up, and when I did, my leg went sideways, and I fell onto the wall and down to the floor and knocked my shoulder back into place. At that point, and I drug myself over to the toilet sink mirror combo, and I'm still hearing Billy Ray called out, and I look up, and the deputy that tased me was standing there flipping me off, giving me the bird. And I looked in the mirror, and I at that point realized why he was calling me Billy Ray. They had pulled so much hair out of the sides of my head, it looked like I had I think they call it a mullet or something like that. But I just had big, huge patches of hair pulled out of both sides of my head. One of them was, during taking me up the hallway, was trying to rip my ear off. That ear swelled up. I couldn't even lay on that side for a month or two. I couldn't even pee for about a month really well because they bruised my kidney so bad. And then they just left me there. I thought, well, it was either the next morning or next day. I don't know, because in the military they train you that if you're, you know, taken prisoner or whatever, they train you to go to a place. They teach you how to lower your heart rate, shut your mind down, eliminate as much movement and, you know, just anything going on around you. You just kind of shut down. You go into your own coma. It's just something I believe that's just built into man. And it was basic instinct survival at that point. I was 2nd 502nd Air Assault Division, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and Charlie Company, 1st and 9th Air Cav, Camp Hobie, Korea. Spent time on a demilitarized zone. Did a lot of special ops. So if I had wanted at any point, I could have resisted, but I didn't. Well, they left me there. They didn't even x-ray my leg for 4 days. I couldn't even get up off my bunk to get to the food. They would drop my food at the door and laugh at me, put me off, shut the door back. I couldn't even call. I tried to call a bondsman at some point. For a couple of days, I couldn't even get to a phone. I couldn't walk. I couldn't. I was begging other prisoners to please call somebody for me to help me. I had money to make bond, but the bondsman wanted a cosigner. So, that was not even an option.
Excuse me, Mr. Kirkland. You had been to your bonding hearing at that point?
No, ma'am, I had not. I didn't go to the bonding hearing until
How did you know how much the bond was?
My bond was only $500. It was the charge was excessive noise.
Well, let me ask
it was
you.
You
had not been to court at that point, had you?
No, ma'am, I had not.
Okay. So you were trying to get someone who would be willing to co-sign your bond, but you hadn't been to your bonding hearing.
No, ma'am. I don't remember if at some point, and I'm not sure what day it was, because I was in such shock that, excuse me, Mary, I was in such shock that by the time somebody did finally, I think it might have been the inmate that they put in the cell with me, helped me over to the phone. And at that time, I tried to call a bondsman, but the person that I tried to call to co-sign, I couldn't. You have to have a code supplied by the jail, and you have to have deposit and enough money to make the calls to the bondsman or even to someone outside the jail to come in and help you. Basically, no one knew where I was. I just disappeared. I felt I was being kidnapped and thrown into a dungeon and being tortured,
You were thrown into a dungeon and you were being tortured. Go ahead, sir.
On day four, they x-rayed the leg, came back and said, yes, your leg is fractured. And they wheeled me into the courtroom to face the charge of petty disorderly conduct or excessive noise, however it is. It's a $50 ticket, I believe. I don't know. The prosecutor and the judge were saying to me, do you understand the charges that are against you, the charge of that's against you? And I didn't even know what that's when I found out what the charge was 4 days later. I didn't even know what the charge was. And I told the judge at that time, and all of this is in the court records, because the stenographer is taking everything down, and I believe they even record it. I don't know that they video record it, but I do know they voice record. And I did look at the transcript, and it does say in the transcript, it states the judge saying, you hear me on the state say, my leg's broke, I need to get to the hospital. Can I go to the hospital? And right after that, the judge states, if you sign this plea deal, you can go to the hospital today. At that point, I had been in there 4 days, I believe, at this point, and still no medical treatment. The nurse did at one point bring a leg splint in, but she didn't know how to even put it on. She had to go get a young man, which also didn't know how to put it on, and he and I figured out how to get it on. So after I took the deal, I would have done anything to get out of there at that point. I was taken
you
back
took
to
the
my
deal. You took the
ma'am.
Deal they offered you.
Yes, ma'am. The
I
one
said you
pro-
took the deal.
Yes.
Because you
because
wanted to get to the hospital with
hospital if I took the deal. I was afraid if I didn't take the deal, I wouldn't be able to get out again because I couldn't get anybody to co-sign.
Of course you were afraid.
I wasn't even in my
did
hometown.
Anyone,
I live in
did anyone say to you that you had to take the deal to go get medical treatment?
Excuse me?
Or did you just feel like they had you prisoner until you took the deal? Which one?
I felt that if I didn't take the deal, I wouldn't be able to go to the hospital, and at that point, I had been in shock for 4 days. I took the 1 year probation, and of course they tack on all of these other things. You got to go to an alcohol class. You got to pay for this. You got to pay for that. You got to pay for community service. You got to pay for all these different things. So I took the deal. I was desperate to get to a hospital. So they took me back to my cell, and I was waiting to be released. And at 10 o'clock that night, I hadn't been released. And so I called over the guard at that point and asked him, what's the deal? Mary, I haven't been the most upstanding citizen all my life. I have been to prison. I have been to jail in my life. I used to have a bad alcohol problem. DWIs and stupidity sent me to the penitentiary. So I've been through the system in my life, and I know what's right and I know what's wrong. And I knew that at that point, I knew I wasn't going to get out. They were trying to concoct something because I was so injured they couldn't let me out. The commander came to my cell, tells me, Mr. Kirkland, I haven't reviewed the videos. I've been out of town. I saw the good old boy, Con, coming down the pipe, and I sat there and waited for him to finish the con, and he's saying, yeah, we're going to take care of this. We're going to fix this. But there's protocol. He said, there's protocol. You go to our doctors. You do this. You do that. We'll fix your leg even if it's surgery. I looked at the commander at that point, and I said, yes. I said, yes, sir, you are going to fix it, and y'all are going to pay for this. I said, let me tell you, as soon as you open the doors on me, I'm going to go get the best attorney that I can find, and I'm going to come back. Well, at that point, they knew that this was not going to be an easy battle for them because I'm not a chump and I don't just lay down for anybody. I'm a pretty tough old boy, and I know my rights. I know my rights as a human. I know my rights as a citizen of the United States of America, and what was going on was something that I may as well have been at Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo Bay or in a hole in Vietnam or captured by the Taliban and your ears cut off. I might as well have. I was in that situation. So he told me, he came back, he told me, he said, you're not going anywhere. We've got another charge on you. Well, 3 months earlier, that same person, that same predator, was at the residence where I was residing with my friend that's disabled, and she would not leave the apartment. She was being very loud, very boisterous, and that was the first confrontation I'd ever had with her. I asked her to leave several times. She didn't, so I pulled a chair out from under her, and she fell on her bottom. Didn't get hurt or anything like that, but she, you know, I helped her up. I wasn't even mad. I just wanted her out. So I helped her up and helped her to the door. They came back that night with another charge of third-degree attempted assault. Now, I don't know how you attempt to assault someone, but the only thing that got assaulted was her pride. When the deputy turned to walk away, I knew at that point I wasn't going to be able to get to the hospital. Hours earlier, I'm thinking they're doing something. They're not going to let me out, and I've got to find another recourse to get to the hospital. I had found a razor blade on the sink, and so I knocked on the window. I hollered at the guard. I said, sir, you're taking me to the hospital right now. And I cut myself. Now, the razor didn't cut me very bad. It wasn't even enough for stitches or anything like that. But, it, you know, I just wanted to make it bleed to where he understood that I wasn't playing. So he continued to stand there, and he kind of laughed at me. And I cut myself again and again and again. Eventually, 14 times, and told him he better get moving and get somebody in there, and they're going to get me to the hospital right now. Where they came in, taped me to the wheelchair that they had provided for me. They taped me and then put me in a van. They were using different pressure points on my ear. Below your ear, you have a very sensitive pressure point. You can actually even knock someone out that way. They were doing those type of pressure points, bending my thumbs back. These are really intentional things that to, and I've seen it done over and over and over in jails and in prisons, to make a prisoner comply. And the thing is I was taped to a wheelchair. There, I had a broken leg. There was no comply what. There was nothing to comply to. Take me to the hospital. When we get to the hospital, they wheel me into the emergency room. The emergency room staff comes into the area where I was at, and I start screaming, please help me. They broke my leg. Please help me. They broke my leg. I said, please, please, they're going to kill me. And I thought that, at that point, that that's what was going to happen. I knew that if they let me go back into that jail, I didn't believe at that point that I would walk out. They were instructed at that point by the Boulder County Sheriff's Department, do not look at his lower extremities. Only concentrate on the cuts. That's what he's here for. I continued to scream and beg, please look at my legs. And even one of the emergency room nurses couldn't take it and had to leave the room because she knew that what they were doing was wrong, but they were being instructed by the Boulder County Sheriff's Department to do this. So, you know, a couple of months ago.
So the police took you to the hospital because you had cut yourself, and they instructed the hospital personnel, these are doctors and nurses, not to look at your lower extremities. In other words, not to look at your broken leg. And the
and
the hospital personnel obeyed the police and did not treat a hurt patient for his broken leg. They didn't even look at it because the police had instructed them to disregard your lower extremities. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am. And I kept looking at the officer standing next to the bed, and I kept saying, why are y'all torturing me? This is all over me cussing someone out who I believe to be a predator. I believe today she's a predator. I don't believe she stopped being a predator, and I intend to prove it in federal court.
I understand you have a lawsuit filed against the jail and against the state of Colorado. Is that right?
Well, the thing about the state of Colorado is they claim sovereignty in the state of Colorado. It's like trying to take the King of England to court. You can't do it.
Wrong to American citizens, and then they have immunity. We have some people on the line who would like to speak on this matter. I want to say to everyone that Mr. Robert Cotton Kirkland will also be on Human Rights for Prisoners March tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Pacific time, when he will continue to tell you about his horrible, horrible incarceration, where he was kept without treatment for 8 days in Boulder, Colorado jail with a broken leg, where police had broken his leg.
Yeah.
He will tell you about how they thought he was dead and came into his jail cell and checked him to see was he still alive, because he had put himself almost into a coma like he was taught to do in the U.S. military. He had slowed down his breathing and respiration to the point that he looked dead to them, and they came in to check to see was he dead, and he was still alive. And this is what happened in Boulder, Colorado jail. We have other individuals who are coerced into making plea deals. We have on the line, I believe, the mother of a young man who is right now incarcerated in Franklin County, North Carolina, for having been held for 1.5 years without trial. His name is Shannon Nairobi. He is held without trial. He's been in jail for almost a year and a half. They don't want to give him a trial because even his victim said he is not guilty of shooting her. So since the prosecution knows that they cannot win that case, their idea is to keep him indefinitely detained in jail. That also happened to Terrell Scott. Terrell Scott was held in prison in Pennsylvania for 4.5 years with trial denied. So, Mr. Kirkland, the best thing you may have done is to go ahead and sign that plea deal, or you might have died of infection set up in that broken leg, because in America, American citizens, human rights are disregarded, and they are honestly kept incarcerated indefinitely without trials until they sign plea deals. Is Ms. Elizabeth on the phone? Ms. Elizabeth Crudup, who is the mother of a young man who is indefinitely detained right now.
Yes, ma'am. I'm right here, Ms. Neal. And it is so
did you hear what happened to Mr. Robert Kirkland?
I am in shock, and my heart goes out to Mr. Kirkland and his family for what he had to endure. And I know even if the physical signs may be gone, I know that it must be devastating emotionally and mentally to have survived through that and know that the people who did that had no right to do that to anybody in this world, and they still continue to be part of the law enforcement in Boulder, Colorado.
I wasn't even allowed to file charges against the officers. I had to file the federal lawsuit, and then I'll have to win the suit in federal court and then get the judge to pave the way to where I can open a lawsuit against the county, I'm suing the four officers, and I'm suing the nurse at the jail.
I hope that you are successful in your suit, so that other law enforcement individuals or people employed in the law enforcement can see that they cannot get away with this, because right now they feel untouchable. Very similar. My son, I have been too scared to ask him if they've done anything to him physically. Many times he's tried to open his mouth, and I tell him, Shannon, I cannot do this if I know all the details. And it is just absolutely scary. It is just absolutely scary to imagine what the people who jail, who are charged with jailing, we are all innocent until proven guilty. To jailing, you know, presumed innocent people, what they do to them in there. What they do to them in there. It's just shocking.
It's a matter of accountability. In my lawsuit, it's never been about any kind of money. It's about making the police accountable for what they do if it's illegal. I was already disabled. I had been disabled for 10 years. So all they did, they beat up a disabled person, which is actually a first-degree felony in this state.
It is absolutely horrible. It should not be done. Individuals in America or no place else should be detained indefinitely without trial, like Shannon Nairobi. That's his mother. You just hear it speak. Her son is only a 19-year-old, and he's an innocent young man. He's incarcerated in Franklin County jail, and he's being held under indefinite detention and denied a trial because he will not admit guilt to a crime that the prosecutor knows that he cannot prove. We had another mother named Holly Austin. Her son is Terrell Scott. They kept him 4.5 years without trial. And we also have other individuals who have been kept indefinitely without trial if they refuse to plea bargain. We have on the phone Mr. Kirkland, who was kept in jail with a broken leg. And they refused to treat his broken leg, which was putting him in shock. He was in and out of consciousness for 8 days in Boulder County Jail. He was in and out of consciousness, and they refused to put him in the hospital for his broken leg. They refused to treat it because they wanted him to plea bargain. So these are the circumstances under which many innocent people plead guilty to crimes they did not do. We have two other individuals on the phone. I'd like to give an opportunity to say something. I have 815-7704-6814. If either one of you, 5812, if either one of you would like to say something, now is your time.
Hi, my name is Joshua. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? You can hear me, Mary?
We hear you, Joshua.
Okay. I'm just
we
like
hear
to say
you,
thank
Joshua.
You so much.
Hello?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for speaking with Robert Kirkland about this. My name is Joshua Johnson. I was hurt in the Boulder County Jail as well, and I started up a Facebook page called Tortured in Boulder County Jail in 2009, 2 years before Mr. Kirkland was injured, because I was concerned about how I was treated in there. I got erroneously detained, and once I got out of jail, the district attorney dismissed the charge against me, which just had to do with an alcohol violation, which was outdated. But while I was in the jail, I was actually tortured in there. I was held over the weekend. I was an innocent inmate because the charge was dismissed against me. But while I was in there, they took all my clothes off, tied me to a chair, and put a bag on my head and beat me because I wouldn't stop talking about how I was innocent. And I endured torture in there, came out alive, but I've been having a hard time recovering ever since, and it's been, you know, several years of coping with post-traumatic stress. It's pretty hard